Okay, Chevra. Last week we discussed what I called the Heter Iska basics, which is that we have this device, this mechanism, to avoid the Isser of Ribbis, by which I lend you money. I lend you, let's say, $100, and the Halacha says, you know what? We're not going to be collecting interest, really, but what we'll do is we'll assume that the $100 I lent you is really $50 of a loan, and $50 I'm giving as something that you'll guard as a picadon, and the picadon can earn profit, and therefore, when I get my profit, I get my, what you would otherwise call interest, I'm really getting it from the chitzi picadon, I'm getting it from the half, which is not alone the half that I am giving you as an investment. And we also mentioned that this idea of heter iska is a relatively recent thing in Judaism. This idea that I can structure a something that looks like a loan, but really I'm structuring it as half loan and half investment and half picadon, that's a relatively recent thing in Judaism. In fact, it was begun, we mentioned, by Reb Menachem Mendel Avigdor's in like the 17th century. That's when Heter Iska was developed, and the first source of it, we said, was in the Sefer Nachlas Shiva, which came out in 1681. This is a review of last time. Now, what changed? How come until the early 17th century, right, nobody thought of changing loans into investments? What changed between, the time that the Torah was given and then? Any suggestions? Caroline, you like the question, apparently. You're smiling.
I mean, would the situation arise, like... I mean, it seems like this was created in response to the fact that people were giving loans, Jews were giving loans to one another. So either it was happening before and people just didn't care about it, or...
Okay.
Or all of the loans were, like, within, like, it was economically feasible to give interest-free loans within your, like, small...
In your small community. Jewish world. Okay, maybe.
Small.
Why?
Yeah, but...
So what changed? Yeah, Ben?
It used to be that Jews would make money giving out loans with interest to non-Jews,
right.
But eventually many parts of Eastern Europe it became illegal.
Correct.
Here's the thing. It was always somewhat illegal to charge interest, and you're saying that maybe the law changed and they couldn't earn money from charging interest to non-Jews, so they had to earn money
Correct. As
moneylenders charging it to Jews. Maybe, perhaps... I would argue, and I think Rabbi Bleich makes this argument in Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 2, that you heard of the Industrial Revolution?
Yes.
When was the Industrial Revolution?
1700s.
1700s, okay. And maybe a little bit earlier, but so, yeah, okay. Cotton Gin, Eli Whitney. And what changed in some ways... was that society moved from primarily being a farming society, agricultural, to getting more involved in business. And you see, when I'm a farming society, so I can lend money in my small little Jewish world, I can lend money to other people, and I'm going to say, you know what, I'll lend you interest-free money, we'll get it back. The amount of money that you need in a farming society, again, I'm talking about a farming society, that's not the way it is today. Today, if I run a farm, I need to spend like $500,000 to buy this massive combine harvester. But in their times, the big money...
The land was the capital.
The land was the capital. They needed less money, kind of. If they would need money, they'd need money to kind of get over a little hump, and they'd get it back pretty quickly. They need less amount of money to get by, and therefore...
And also it was non-Jews who were owning the land. But
non-Jews owned the land, and if Jews are going to lend to other Jews, it wasn't as big of a deal. But when you get involved in business, when society, when people begin to move from farms into cities, and you're beginning to own stores, and you're beginning to get involved in the type of business that you got to buy a lot of stuff at the beginning of the year to sell it over the course of the year, and you need more money, so now I'm in trouble. So as society changed, they came up with this idea of heter iska in order to allow people to earn money, right? To borrow money with interest, etc., or not interest, with dividends of investments. That's basically what we're getting at. Point one. Point two. Is this a legal loophole or an illegal loophole? Like, how legit is this heter iska thing? Now, okay, it's a balancing act, I got it. Let's go a step further. We have a number of examples in halacha of stuff that we do that seems to kind of be a subterfuge, a fake, to avoid the laws. Mechiras chametz. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
What am I doing? You know, I go to this guy in Riverdale, John Brown, and I say, John, I have all the chametz of Washington Heights. And John is like, I'll buy it from you. Right? And it's right. John Brown is buying all the chametz of Washington Heights and all the chametz in Teaneck and Englewood and Riverdale. Right? Even Riverdale, Bechfoyda Be'atzmo. So, how do you do that? Right? One guy's buying all the chametz. Isn't that like an illegal trick? Yeah, sure. Mechiras chametz existed in ancient times. In the Tosefta, Mechiras chametz was that you're on the boat and it's Pesach and there's like one guy and two Jews on the boat. What do? I sell you the chametz, right? And that actually became the guys. I handed it to him. But this massive Mechiras chametz seems to be a subterfuge. It seems to be a fake. We have other things that seem to be fakes in Judaism, no? Prusbel, right? Prusbel is a big one. Right, so Shemitah. Shemitah comes supposed to cancel the loan. Do I?
Nah.
Nah. You say, I'm handing it over to Beis Din, and that's okay. Right, now, okay, Prisbel's Talmudic, and the Gemara works very hard how it works. Eruv. Right, I'm not allowed to carry on Shabbos. Come on, dude. Right, you don't carry on Shabbos? Right, I'm the Eruv Rav, no? I'm in charge of this thing. Right, what's going on here? Mechiras chametz. We have other things that are seeming subterfuges. For example, heter mechira on Shemitah. Right? Heter mechira on Shemitah, that's probably the most recent one. It's even after the heter iska. Right? That they sell the land of Israel to a non-Jew. And suddenly, chick-chock-boom, what's the problem, right? So, these all present a problem in halacha called ha'arama. Harama is an illegal mechanism to avoid something. And the question is, sometimes we allow you to do this, sometimes we don't allow you to do this. When do we say that it's permitted, when is it not permitted? This is not a simple question, and it's relevant for our conversation of heter iska. So, I'd like to argue as follows. And there are a number of approaches. All this firm deal with this. It's not me. But one approach is that what is halacha? Okay, if any of you read Professor Chaim Zeman's book called Halacha, he's my friend, I like him. So what exactly is halacha? It's not an easy question. Now, Professor Zeman takes the approach in his book that halacha really means the study of Torah. That's very brisker. I think, practically speaking, halacha is a written record of minhagim.
You think or he think?
I think. Oh. Professor Simon thinks that halacha really is Talmud Torah. And it's just as much halacha to talk about Tamura and exchanging Kiddush on this animal. Right? That's just as much halacha, maybe. And he does point out a number of sugyas in the Gemara that seem to be so far removed from reality. Right? He begins his book by talking about, and you'll forgive me because it's not me, it's really him. He remembers in high school, we actually went to the same high school, just at slightly different times. He was in Near Eastern in Baltimore. I was there a little bit in high school also. And he remembers in 10th grade learning a sugya about whether tchilas biyakona or sof biyakona. That means, you know, there are three ways to get married in halacha. Giving money, writing a document, or having sexual intercourse is also a way of getting married in halacha. And the Gemara discusses what point in sexual intercourse is the kinyan. Do you actually become married? And the Gemara discusses, is it tchilas bia or sof bia? And the Gemara says, oh, the nafgamina would be that the woman is having sex with some guy and some other guy gives her money in middle of the act, and the question is, who's she married to? Now, when you think about it, like, wowza, that's off your rocker.
She's married to both.
What?
Married to both.
You can't be married to both.
But
one woman can't be married to both people. That's really bad.
The halacha says that both of them work for marriage.
Well, what is this?
But you're only married to one guy, so which guy is it? You gotta figure it out. Hey, both. All right.
The one that got there first.
So.
So it's the
same. But like, hello! Right, so this is a problem. So Professor Seaman uses that in his book to maintain that what halacha really is it's a set of abstract principles. It's Torah in the brisker, abstract sort of way. And you know what? It's very divorced from reality. Right? It's really, and trust me, that case is pretty divorced from reality. Agreed?
Yes.
Now, I would argue that what Professor Seaman is describing is more like what you do in the Beis Medrash in Yeshiva. But halacha as halacha, right, is more about minhagim, what we do. And by the way, that's why the Ramah, for example, writes that the fundamental principle in halacha is Hilchos HaKabasra, is the last generation of authorities. Right? So if I have, right, that's why the Ramah says, like, I paskin, like, all of these Sefer Ugar and Aguda and all of the books from the generation right before the Ramah. Because that's what people do. And when they have what people do, that's the halacha. How come you need Gemara? How come you need the whole halachic line? So that's probably because of something called the law of recognition. In law school, they speak about, anyone here a lawyer? No one. Wow. Right? So the rule of recognition is that practices, just because people do them, doesn't mean it's correct. There's a concept in Judaism called minhag, as minhag tos, minhag shtos.
Mm-hmm.
Minhag, right, Rabbi Natan writes in one place that minhag has the same Hebrew letters as the word gehenim. Right? Meaning, okay, it's a minhag, go to hell. Right? That's minhag is gehenim. So here it is, right? If a minhag has some halachic basis, I have a rule of recognition, I find a source, I find the Gemara, and people have been doing it, that's halacha. Halacha means what people do, the common practice, that can be traced to an original source. That's halacha.
How far back do you need the original source?
So ideally, to Moshe on Har Sinai, right? Gemara, we assume, comes from there also, right? You need some original source. Sometimes something that's not based on the Gemara, so it's an enactment that was made by some Rishonim, but the earlier back it goes, the more legit it is, right? But really, I do it because everybody's doing it, pardon the high school boy's expression. Now, what this really means is, I have something called Heter Iska. And Heter Iska seems to be wrong. But you know what? Everybody's doing it. And I have some way of justifying it, because I can say, you know what, it's not really a loan. It's really an investment and half loan, half right, what we spoke about last week, and like I'm really getting the money instead of swearing, right? So I have some way of justifying it. Minhag, people have been doing it good enough. Now, it started pretty late, but there was some rationale that it's based on good enough. And therefore, even though it seems to be wrong, okay, people have been doing it, They had longer beards than you have. They were Orthodox. Give it to them. That's one approach. By the way, does this approach sound satisfying?
No.
Not at all. But many of the poskim, I actually give you over here somewhere in this Sorshi, Akshuva, the Minchas Yitzchak. It's the last thing I talk about mortgages. The Minchas Yitzchak writes with respect to mortgages, that was Niskabel Kvar. People have already been doing this. Okay. What am I going to do? Right? That's one approach. The other approach, and I was speaking to my friend Rabbi Daniel Feldman this afternoon about this. The other approach goes something like this. You know, halacha has two elements. They're called the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. The letter of the law can be maintained by saying it's not really a loan, it's really an investment. However, that goes against the spirit of the law, because the spirit of the law is, I'm not supposed to be getting more money back, and that's why you think it's a ha'arama. That's why it looks improper. However, sometimes I have to try to figure out the spirit of the law by looking deeply into the original sources. Right? The Torah, in the context of Ribbis, Ki yamuch achicha, let's read the first source. Ki yamuch achicha, umati ado imach. Your brother gets poor. He doesn't have money. Vechazakdebo. Torah says you're supposed to support him. Geve tosha vachayimach. Let them live with you. Al tikach meito neshech v'tarbit. Don't take interest. V'yareta me'olkecha. Fear God. V'chei achicha imach. Allow your brother to live. The Torah says don't take interest. Because if you take interest, you're going to be hurting the guy. And the guy's going to end up losing all of his money. Because, right, interest bites into you, and right, anyone who's ever been in credit card debt knows how bad it can be, right? And you make those minimum payments once a month, and let's be honest, right, it keeps on ballooning, right? So, don't take interest because it will take away that guy's life. It's going to hurt him. But one could argue that if the reason the Torah says, looking deeply in the sources, the reason the Torah says not to charge interest is because you want to keep that guy alive. But in our world, our post-industrial revolution, or when we're no longer living in the farms, in order to keep the guy alive, he needs that cash flow. She needs that money. So therefore, I'm fulfilling this, the spirit of the law by inventing a heter iska. Wow. That is already, right? A zag draped. No? Maybe. Maybe. Many of the sperms say, in fact, the Sma mentions the original commentary on Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat. The Sma has a small kuntres haribis. And the Sma says, in his opinion, the reason why heter iska is permitted is because of v'chei achicha imach. It's os gimel in the Sma. Okay, that could be, right? Now, by the way, a similar idea. You know, there's a discussion about the heter mechira in Shemitah. Is this an illegal subterfuge? One could argue that what's the nature of Shemitah? Is the nature of Shemitah to be just that the land should not have work done to it? Or do I say that I look into the psukim more deeply? And the nature of Shemitah is that the poor people, v'achlu evyonei amecha, the poor people should be able to come and eat. That's why I leave the fields open so all the poor people can come and take it. And therefore, the defenders of heter mechira are saying, you know what? The heter mechira is there in order to allow the poor people to eat. And in our world, in Eretz Yisrael, right, I don't know, heter mechira 1881, right, 1882, 1889, those are the heter mechiros, the original ones, 1896, you just keep on adding seven, right? So, in order for people to live, the ochlu avyonei amecha, if they're not going to work the land, they're going to die. So therefore, it's not undermining what the Torah says. Adarabba, it's being mekayim, what the Torah says.
But that's different, because like, that's directly allowing them to pursue their livelihood, whereas charging someone interest Like,
whoa. But again, there also, there is a way of fulfilling I'm fulfilling the letter of the law by selling the land to the non-Jews.
I think Shemitah, like, that's a great justification for Shemitah, or for Hetter Mechira, but I'm saying, I don't see how that logic applies to
the Heter Iska. So, I think Heter Iska, the Torah says, the Torah says, don't charge interest to allow him to live, but now I need to charge interest. I need to have a loan, because if I'm not going to charge interest, so you won't have the cash flow. You won't be able to get money. So, in order to get money, I have... What?
If you don't charge an interest, you just don't...
No one's going to give you money. No one's going to give you money for free anymore.
I think it's a step removed, though, from Hetter Mechira, because that's a loophole, but it's directly saying you can't.
I'll say it like this.
Money.
Some of these.
Whereas this is like, oh, well, I have to charge interest so I can have a cash flow
I need to charge. If this guy doesn't take an interest bearing loan, if he is waiting to get a non interest bearing loan, he'll never get a loan.
Right.
That's right.
Right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So in order for him to get a loan, right, he has to take an interest bearing loan. And you need a lender and a borrower. Right? So that's the other approach. That's approach number two. Approach one is just pure minhag. Approach two is kind of that we're looking at the letter of the law. Now, by the way, heter of Mechiras Chametz is the easiest one. Because Mechiras Chametz, when you think about it, what Hashem does not want is that I should own chametz on Pesach. Now, I sold the chametz, I don't own the chametz on Pesach. Unlike Heter Mechira, where what I'm doing is kind of the opposite of what the Torah wants, and Heter Iska, what I'm doing is the opposite of what the Torah wants, by Mechiras chametz, I'm doing what the Torah wants. Hashem wants me not to own chametz, I don't own chametz, right? It's a much easier... So it's a much easier type of thing. It's less ha'aroma dick. Yes, sir.
But when you work for a business, it works differently for interest. Because, and I know this personally because I work for a business and I do this, that we only put interest on if the guy pays late. If they don't pay,
I hear what you're saying. That will.
I'm not disputing what you're saying about loans. I'm just saying that this is another aspect to it.
Correct. I mean that's another way of. Let's kind of go a step further though. Rav Schechter in his Sefer Be'ikve Hatzon. Actually, we have it right over here on the sermon shelf. Rav Schechter in the Sefer B'Ikvei Hatzon develops an idea that ha'aroma is a way of avoiding prohibitions. And that's permitted. You see, there are two types of mitzvahs in the Torah. There's mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh. A mitzvah saseh, Hashem wants me to do this. If I employ a device that I'm not going to do what Hashem wants, that's forbidden. But if it's a mitzvah lo saseh, that means Hashem wants me not to do that. And if I have some technicality by which I am not doing it, that's good enough. So therefore, Rav Schechter says, you know what? If I want to sell my chametz, I have to sell my chametz in a way that I make sure I get the mitzvah of destroying chametz. There is a mitzvah, Erev Pesach, I should burn my chametz. I have to make sure I sell my chametz, and I leave over a little bit of chametz that I don't sell in order to get the mitzvah. Because if I sell chametz and I don't get the mitzvah, right, that would be an illegal loophole. What? Not a legal loophole. Because Hashem wants me to do the mitzvah of destroying my last bit of chametz. So if I sell 99% of my chametz and I have one little bit left and I burn it, great. But if I sell 100% of my chametz, I am also undermining the mitzvah of destroying my own chametz. Similarly, by Shemitah, the question of whether I'm allowed to, the question of whether Heter Mechira is legit or not legit, might involve what's the nature of the prohibitions on Shemitah. Are the prohibitions on Shemitah don't work the land, or is the prohibitions of Shemitah that I have to do a positive act of being mafkir the land? Is it my mitzvah? Right? Is it a mitzvah asay? Or is it a mitzvah los asay? How do I understand the Torah and says Rashav Sarah? Again, there's a lot to be said about this. I gave Shira and Shemitah. We'll just throw it out there and leave it. Ribbis. One could argue that ribbis is a prohibition. The Torah wants me not to charge interest. And therefore, if what I do is I am not charging interest because I have this device to avoid it, that's good enough. But I will not allow you to use a device to avoid doing a mitzvah asay. Let me give you Rav Shechter's proof. His proof is, there's a Gemara Bechayris and the Tosis over here, the second and third source. I really have to start going quicker. But the second and third source over here on the sheet is the Gemara Bechayris talks about how, you know, the earliest Ha'arama and Shas is the Mechira Behema HaMevakeres. Let's go slowly. There is an animal that is about to have a baby. That baby will be a Bechor. A Bechor has Kedusha. Right? I'm supposed to bring it on the Mizbeach. Today we don't have a Mizbeach, so therefore I can't really do anything with that animal. So what do I do when my animal is about to give birth? Rav Shechter likes to tell the story that, like, one time he's in the middle of giving shiur, and he gets an emergency guy who knocks on the door, Rabbi Shechter, it's an emergency shayla, you have to interrupt shiur and answer the shayla. So Rav Shechter picks up the phone. Right? In those days, it used to be a payphone. People remember payphones? It's like ancient history. You know, that's where Superman got dressed. So Rav Shechter goes to the payphone, and he takes the phone call. It's some farmer in the Midwest. He's like, Rav Shechter, my animal is about to give birth. I don't want the animal to have Kedushas Bechor. What do I do? So it's like, you sell it to a guy. That's what you do. You sell the animal to a guy to avoid Kedushas Bechor. Okay? So the guy's like, well, how do you do that? So Rav Shechter's like, oh, the same way you sell chametz. That's what you do. So the guy's like, Rabbi Shechter, you know, I never sold my chametz. So that's... okay, but the point is, right, you sell your animal, and therefore it takes away the Kedusha. Now, the Gemara Bechora says that's like a really bad thing. It's a really bad thing because you're using this device that seems to be illegal. The animals both have Kedusha. You're selling it to a guy, you shouldn't do that. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim, that Rav Meri Bar Rochel did it, and all of his animals died. Right? So, don't do that. However, the Balei HaTosfos said, we do it. And they explain that the difference between Rav Meri Bar Rochel and us is that, you know what, we live in a time that there's no alternative. And if you're not going to do it, you will end up violating the Aveira of doing Malacha, of doing work with an animal that has Kedusha, and therefore we do it. But in their times, there were ways that they could have gotten around it. There are ways that, like, before the animal is born, you can make a mum in the animal. They knew how to do this, that, like, you reach into the womb and you, like, cut off the animal's pinky toe or something so the animal won't have...
a mum or, like, a defect.
Right. they knew how to do this. We don't know how to do this. Therefore, right? But the point that Rav Shechter derives from this Gemara with the Tosfos is that I'm allowed to employ a device. I can use a ha'arama to get out of an aveira. But I can't use a ha'arama to get out of a mitzvah. Right? In other words, in our world, since I don't know how to get rid of the kedusha of a bechor anymore, because I can't do that, so it's going to be an aveira if the animal is born. So I can do a ha'arama to avoid the aveira. But I can't do a ha'arama to not fulfill a mitzvah. That's what Rav Shechter says. Therefore, ribbis, I'm doing this haram, I'm using this device not to do an aveira, that's why it will be okay. So far, so good. Here's the problem, though. This week's parasha says that there is a mitzvah to lend money. Im kesef talves ami es ho'ani imach lo siyalo kinosheh. Right? Losa simun olav neshach. And the posting of this week's parasha says, you have a mitzvah to what?
You're still lending money.
There's a mitzvah to lend money to poor people. So now, question. When I use a heter iska, is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah of lending money to poor people or not? Do I say, I'm not doing the mitzvah because this is all self-interest, that I am earning a profit, it is dividends, it's an investment, it's not a mitzvah of lending money to poor people. So I would have said, of course I'm doing, of course I'm lending money. Look at the Chafetz Chaim. Look at the Chafetz Chaim. That Sefer Ahavas Chesed, chapter 15. Okay, the Chafetz Chaim, by the way, was super orthodox. He writes, "V'ata nidaber k'tzas odos ha'mal v'arivachim gufa." I want to speak a little bit about people who lend to get profit. Rishon l'kol. First thing is, yirash ya heter iska shalom nasa kedin shelo ya olav iser ribis chas v'shalom. You have to make sure that your heter iska is proper, so that there's no prohibition of ribis. De'im lav hachi soshio kol nechasav mismotetin v'kolen. You see, this is like part of a firm kind of Chafetz Chaim. Benny Brown actually writes this in some of his essays about Chafetz Chaim years ago, when we gave shiur about how the Mishnah Berurah wrote his book. The Chafetz Chaim, unlike other Sfarim, incorporates Musar into the Halacha, and the Musar almost becomes primary. The Chafetz Chaim writes, don't use a bad Heter Iska. Why not? Because if you use a bad Heter Iska, the Gemara says all of your possessions will end up being destroyed. That's like, the Musar becomes the Halacha, no? You could just say, if you don't use a good Heter Iska, you'll burn in hell. Right? But the Chafetz Chaim says, no. You're going to lose all your money, no? Like the Gemara says, besides the fact that you'll have a serious punishment. And the Gemara says that when Yechezkel HaNavi brought back the Mesim in the Valley of Dura, they all got up besides those who lent with Ribbis. In other words, if you lend with Ribbis, you are not going to get up at Chiyas HaMesim. Right? This is Chafetz Chaim scaring you to death. Or scaring you not to life, as the case might be. Right? Now, if you lend with ribbis, you are signing about yourself that you are denying God. And I don't want to explain how bad it is if you lend with ribbis, and many people view this iser like it's heter, and they don't know how bad it is. Gam. Now the underlying parts. Gam tzar sheyeda. Gam hu lo niftar mi mitzvis esay d'im kesef ta'ove. Haynu hava b'tayis gemilas chosid. Lefi kocha v'lo yasha b'nasha v'asheves tos. Dizo chanuso v'chayecha kodmin to atu kavanasini shalom yavol shom adamos brevach kim b'toyis gemilas chesed v'kavanasini shengam hu mochiv b'mitzvah shahava gemilas chesed lefi kocha. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if a person's going to lend money for heter iska, two things could happen. A, maybe your heter iska is no good and you're going to end up not getting up at chiyas hamesim. Bad. B, if you lend money with heter iskas, you don't get the mitzvah of lending money. The mitzvah to lend money is to lend money as chesed. And if I lend money to earn profit, even though you're right, right? Technically speaking, right? The part that's alone is...
If you really believe that heter iska is a thing that works, then why are you not fulfilling the mitzvah of...
Many of the Sfarim make precisely your point. They say, come on, if the Heter Iska works, that means it is a free loan.
Right?
Half of it at least is a free loan. However, the Chafetz Chaim is saying that you don't get the mitzvah of lending money if you use a Heter Iska. Hi, Frida.
It's the difference between avoiding an Aveira, keeping your nose clean, and actually doing a mitzvah.
Correct. So, I mean, but you're arguing, you're trying to defend the Chafetz Chaim, saying the mitzvah is to give a free loan.
I'm not doing that.
But be it as it may, if the Chafetz Chaim is correct, I think that would make every Heter Iska illegal, according to the way Rav Schachter understands it. Because Rav Schachter is saying that I can only do a Ha'arama to avoid an Aveira, right, but I can't do a Ha'arama to get me out of a mitzvah. According to the Chafetz Chaim, when I do a Heter Iska, I am getting myself out of the mitzvah, therefore it should be illegal to do Heter Iskas. The Chafetz Chaim's son writes in his biography that the Chafetz Chaim refused to lend money with Heter Iskas. Whenever he lent money, it was out of Heter Iska, he gave a free loan, end of it, and that is very firm. That is very, very from. Should a person try to avoid using heter iskas? You know, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. The heter iska, yes, people have been doing it for hundreds of years. The argument that you're fulfilling the idea of the chayachicha is a little bit difficult. Right? One could argue that if you really want to be frum, lend, give free loans without heter iskas, if you can afford it.
Is that, I don't, y'all seem to be thinking that's really far-fetched to ever lend money without taking interest, but if you, say you have a needy relative or whatever the situation is, the guy needs, for whatever, he needs $1,000 for whatever, and you are blessed to be in the position of giving instead of getting, then you lend it and you don't even really
Did we speak about this? The common approach to ribbis, I think we gave this as our introduction. This is our last year in ribbis, so we'll go back to our introduction. The approach of ribbis is, you know what? There's no moral flaw in charging interest. The only thing is that the Torah says, for your brother, ki yamuch achicha, when your brother is poor, we should view all Jews like they are brothers or sisters, and therefore, right, we should give them a free loan, because if my sister needs money, of course I'll give her the money, right, without any interest, and that should be my attitude. I should love all Jews to that extent. Now, if I can't earn, if I'm going to be in trouble, use a heter iska, but heter iska on some level is not a simple thing, especially according to this approach of the Chafetz Chaim, it's really not so simple. I have a number of other sources, but I'm not going to get to them tonight, because what I'd like to do now, I mentioned last time some discussion about what to do next. I think you emailed me with the suggestion, Ben, right? Did you email me or someone else?
I did.
What?
Yeah,
you emailed. So, what did you suggest again?
It wasn't for a whole topic, it was a related question.
Related question to Rebus, yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to get there, but what I want to do next, actually, is to talk about Shatnez. One of the two Shirim. Why? Because, I don't know, it's cool. So we'll talk about Shatnez. And I'm thinking of doing a series as follows, called Checking in Halacha. Checking in Halacha, we'll talk about checking for Shatnez, checking for bugs, checking maybe eggs for blood spots, checking the Eruv, checking to make sure there's no chametz before Pesach. I think that's my plan, to use checking in halacha. I was not sure if I should do checking in halacha or checks in halacha. If I do checks in halacha, I could also speak about checks. But I think we'll do checking in halacha. And that will probably take us, we're not that, again, I don't know if this will take us all the way to Pesach, but it might. In other words, it will take us some time to set the table and describe the prohibition of Shatnez, and then what do you have to do to check for Shatnez, when don't you check for Shatnez? That's what I'd like to do as the next topic, unless there are protests. If there are protests, part of me feels I don't care, and I'll do it anyway. But, okay, thank you.